Hello, my name is Michael Wood, lead pastor at First West. I'm thankful you've joined us today. At First West, our vision is to see people changed by the gospel and living out their Christ-centered purpose. I hope today's sermon will challenge your heart and drive you to dive deeper into your purpose created by God. If you have questions about our church, reach out to us by visiting our website, firstwest.cc. Now, here's what I want you to consider for a moment as we jump into today. I would say that in our culture today, we have more outlets to speak, right? Whether that's through social media or through FaceTime or whatever avenue it is, media, whatever it is. I would argue that we also have a global audience to speak to, right? Like if I wanted to, I could pull my phone out and I could have a live conversation with a friend in China right now, okay? That's pretty wild. We also recognize that we have more information at our fingertips to be able to inform what it is that we talk about. Right, so we live definitely in unique days, even from the time I was born, how things have changed just over 30-something years, how things have changed just in the ability to communicate. But here's what I believe to be true, and I think that you would agree with me today, that even though we have a global audience, even though we have more outlets to speak than we've ever had, and we have all the information that we need to inform what it is that we speak about, I would argue that we have never been worse at hearing than right now. We've never been worse at hearing, at listening. We have all these outlets to speak. We have a global audience. But so often, whether it's protesting some movement, being a part of some movement, whether it's ranting on social media, talking a friend's ear off about something that's important to us, right? We have all these outlets to be able to communicate the message that is dear to us, but oftentimes because we're so concerned with speaking, we're not really good at listening and hearing. And I want you to know today, as we jump into Exodus chapter 2, and consider, as we begin this new series, the idea of freedom and what God was doing through his people. Is I want you to know today that God is not a God who simply speaks and does not hear. And yes, we see from his word that there's a lot of different outlets through which he has communicated to his people. But I want you to know today that God hears. If I had one idea that we would chase after today, it would be this, that in our lowest moments, God hears us and he knows. In our lowest moments, God hears us and he knows. Look with me in Exodus chapter 2. We're going to look at verse 23 through 25. It says, after a long time, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned because of their difficult labor, and they cried out. And their cry for help because of difficult labor ascended to God. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham and with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God saw the Israelites, and God knew. Now, if you've been with us in this journey, you recognize that last week we were looking at Genesis chapter 25, right? Esau and Jacob. And remembering that it was connected with this promise that God had made to Abraham in Genesis 15. That Abraham, through you, all the nations will be blessed. Your offspring will be as numerous as the stars. Right, that promise passed from Abraham down to Isaac, and then last week we saw that it went to Jacob, that Jacob was the one with the birthright and the blessing, right? And so we see now that we have gone from Jacob being a part of this promise, right, this covenant promise, to now, all of a sudden in Exodus chapter 2, we see things are not going well. So how did we get to this place? How did we go from what we saw last week and things seem to be going good and God is providing for what he has promised to now God's people are in oppression? Well, if we continue to take a look, if we had time to look all the way through the book of Genesis, we would see that Jacob has 12 sons. One of those sons' name is Joseph, and his brothers don't really care for him that much, so they throw him in a pit, sell him into slavery. He goes into slavery, and eventually God orchestrates his steps to where he ends up being the second most powerful man in the nation of Egypt. And in that time, as he ascends to this powerful position, a famine comes on the land, and Jacob and his sons see that they are in significant trouble. They've run out of food. And so Jacob sends his sons down to Egypt and says, go down there, and maybe we can figure this thing out, right? Maybe God will provide. We need food. Well, as they go down there, all of a sudden they find themselves standing before the second most powerful man in Egypt, and they don't realize it's their brother, Joseph. And in that place, Joseph reveals himself, and he says, listen, I want you to go, and I want you to get Dad. Bring my father, Jacob. Bring him to me. And so Jacob and his sons come back to Egypt, and they settle in the land of Egypt. So now they're in this place of Egypt. Eventually, Jacob's going to die. And you remember, you may remember this phrase when it says that Joseph's brothers, they became fearful. They're like, all right, Dad's not around now. And because Dad's not around now, now Joseph is going to get his vengeance on us because of what we've done. And if you remember, Joseph said to his brothers with kindness, he said, listen, what you guys have intended for evil, God intended for good. And the good that he was speaking of there was the survival of his people, the people that God had promised would be prosperous and would multiply. And so all of a sudden, it brings us to where we're at today, that now they are in a place of oppression. The first thing I want us to realize today when we consider that even our lowest moments, God hears us and he knows, is for us to realize that we all have low moments. Now, that may seem like such an elementary statement today, but for some of us, we're like, yes and amen, and I'm walking in it right now. But just to realize that we all have low moments. For the people of God here in Exodus chapter 2, right, they go to Egypt, they fill the land, but it tells us in chapter 1 of Exodus, it says this. It says there was a new king, or a new Pharaoh, and he didn't know Joseph, and he didn't really care to show favor to God's people. And he became fearful that because the people of God were becoming so numerous, that they would actually rise up against Egypt. So he said, you know what? We're going to oppress them. We're going to deal ruthlessly with them. We're going to make their lives bitter, and we're going to do it through slavery. And so they begin to be oppressed. Eventually, we actually see in verse 22 of chapter 1, not only is it this day-by-day oppression through slavery, but now we're going to move from slavery into genocide. The instruction was given that for every Hebrew boy, for every Israelite boy that was born, he was to be killed. So it makes sense for us when we read here in verse 23 that the Israelites groaned because of their difficult labor, right? To groan, it means to make an inarticulate sound in response to pain or despair, right? To give an outlet, a vocal outlet to the pain or the struggle in your heart. I think all of us would agree that we have parts of our job that cause us to groan. Amen. Several years ago, I was down at Cape Canaveral, the home of NASA. I was with some friends, and we were taking a tour of NASA. And as we were taking this tour, we saw the launching pads and the VAB, the vehicle launch building. That's the one that you so often see, the real big, big, tall building, right? And as we were making this tour, we were kind of coming to an end, and our tour guide began to talk to us about the crawlers. Now, you may not know what the crawler is. The crawler is, that was the pad that they would build, like the Saturn V rocket on. Eventually, they used the space shuttles. They would build it in this vehicle assembly building, and then this crawler would roll out to the launch pad, and they would launch it on the launch pad from this crawler. This crawler, it's the largest self-powered land vehicle in the world, right? It's massive. You can imagine if it's pulling around a space shuttle, it's massive. And here's what's interesting to me. The distance that this crawler has to go from where they build it or where they get it ready to launch and the actual launching pad is 3.5 miles, right? It's got to go 3.5 miles with the space shuttle. And guess how long it takes? 5 hours. This crawler moves at an incredible speed of 1 mile an hour. 1 mile. Here's the good news. When it's unloaded, it doubles in speed. 2 miles an hour. So this guy, he's telling us all this information, and we're kind of like you, like, okay, yeah, whatever. But then he told me something that was fascinating. He said, actually, guys, whenever this crawler makes its way from the vehicle assembly building out to the launch pad, these 5 hours that it's making its trip, there is actually someone who is giving a pretty significant job. And he said that job is turtle duty. We said, what? He said, yes, when the crawler makes its way at a whopping 1 mile an hour from the vehicle assembly building to the launch pad, there is someone whose job for the day is to walk in front of the crawler and to watch for turtles. Now listen, I don't know what last Monday had for you, but I would choose that over walking for 5 hours looking for turtles. It's not tortoises. It's not like I got to go get a front end lifter to get this. Like little box turtles. Like if one should get in a way, I'm going to get him. I'm going to take 3 steps and move him out of the way. And this thing's going to slowly keep going. Now listen, I can just be real honest with you. If there's ever a day that I get assigned to have turtle duty for a thing that moves 1 mile an hour, I'm going to groan all day long. That sounds miserable. Right? Couldn't the dude just walk out, look, and go, nope, there's no turtles, and now I can go about my way. But no, this guy's got to walk with the crawler 1 mile an hour. Listen, we have things in our life, whether it's looking for turtles, whether it's having to deal with a difficult relationship, whether it's our finances, there's things in our life that cause us to groan. Sometimes that groaning comes from a place of having to deal with something over a consistent period of time. Right, just over time, it moves us to a place where we wish it would end. We wish it would stop. And it moves us to a place of hopelessness, and we just go, man, this is not enjoyable. This is not as how I saw this thing playing out. We also recognize that sometimes we groan not because of something happening over a long period of time, but because something significant enters into our life, and it brings a pain, and it brings a despair, and we don't know how to deal with it. We recognize that for the Israelites, it was both. Right? It was this long, consistent period of groaning because of this constant oppression, this constant slavery, these people who were over them that were desiring to make their life bitter. But it also was the pain of walking through a pregnancy in fear that it might be a boy and that you might watch people come in and take that child and throw it into the water. Right? And the Israelites, they're dealing with both of these things. So I think it makes sense to us to recognize why they were groaning. Right? When I say today that in our lowest moments that God hears us and knows, I think we can agree that for the people of God, they had moved to a really low moment. Their lives were not their own. And we're able to track the Israelites and to see how they get to this lowest moment. And for some of us, when we begin to track our lowest moments, we know how we got there too. For some of us, the low moments that you're walking in right now is just a result of living in a fallen and broken world. A world that when sin entered into humanity, into creation, we understand that everything was fractured. And so sometimes we walk through this life and we have to deal with difficult situations simply because we live in a fallen world. In fact, in Romans chapter 8, it says that creation itself, you know the word it uses? It groans. Creation itself, just like the Israelites here are groaning because of what they're facing, it says in Romans 8 that creation itself groans because it recognizes that sin has affected even creation. So some of us, we've walked into our low moments because of the reality of just being in a fallen world. Some of us, we've come to a place of being in a low moment in our life because of decisions that other people have made. Right, their decision and the consequences of that decision didn't just affect them, it's affected you. So you've had to walk in difficult moments, moments of struggling just to find the strength to get through the day because of someone else's decision. But today I really want us to center in and to focus on some of us in here that we have found ourselves in a low moment in our life because of decisions that we have made. The decisions that we have made. To recognize that when I choose my way over what God has commanded in His Word, it's called sin. And the Bible is very clear, and some of you, your life experience testifies to it, that sin has consequences. It always has consequences. And we may not feel it right now. And we may think that it's not going to come tomorrow. But the truth is, the Bible teaches that God is a just God and He will punish sin. And so sin always has consequences. And so maybe for you, that sin is you're holding on to unforgiveness and bitterness in your heart. The Word of God has said that, listen, as the people of God, we're to be people who are quick to forgive. We're people who are to love and forgive even our enemies. It doesn't mean that it's okay what they did, but it means as the people of God, we don't harbor on to that. We're quick to forgive because we understand that our Father has forgiven us. And so for some of us, we're in that low moment of our life because we've continued to hold on to unforgiveness and bitterness, and it's led us to a place where we're continuing to be miserable, all the while the person that hurt you or offended you, they're going on with life as normal. Sometimes our lowest moments happen because of decisions that we've made, that we continue to pursue our own desires over what God has called us to. Right? And just as the Israelites, they lived in this constant bondage by the hands of the Egyptians, some of us today are living in that same bondage because you have allowed sin to have free reign in your life. Right? You've just given up and given in. And say, God, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know who I'm supposed to be. But for whatever reason, we've come to a place just ain't enough. I'm just going to live life the way I want to live. You've stopped fighting back against the grip of sin on your life. Now listen, maybe I don't know what you were expecting today when you walked into this room, and maybe you're thinking, goodness gracious, this is not where I expected to be, you know, sitting into a sermon 10 minutes in. Right? It's heavy. It's heavy to recognize the oppression. It's heavy to recognize the low moments that sometimes our decisions can lead us into because of the consequences of sin. But let me tell you why it's so important to walk into that. It's so important because I want you to hear this, that you cannot step into the freedom God offers you until you recognize and admit the bondage that you're in. You cannot walk into the freedom that God offers you until you acknowledge the bondage that you are in. In the same way, the Israelites begin to groan because they recognize this isn't right. We're being oppressed. We're struggling. We're wrestling. We're dealing with things we never thought we would deal with. And in that place, it moved them to take a step. And so today, I hope that you'll know my heart is not to bring you into this room or for you to be watching and to beat you up, but it's to understand that if you're going to walk into the freedom of the life that God has intended for you, you cannot walk into that freedom until you acknowledge the bondage that you're in because of sin in your life. So what do we do? What do we do when we do come to that place? For some of you, I want you to know I've been praying for you this week that in this message, that by God's love and his grace for you, that he would touch your heart, that he would knock on your heart today to finally bring you to that place of acknowledging what sin has done to you, and by you continuing to pursue that lifestyle where it's brought to you. I want you to know I've been praying for you that God would bring you to that place, not because I want you to walk out of here hating yourself or feeling miserable. I want you to walk in the power of the freedom that can only be found in him. And so when we're in that place, when we come to that place of recognizing, yes, I see the impact that sin's having in my life, what do we do? What do we do when we find ourselves in a low moment? Well, look at what the Israelites did. Look at me in verse 23. It says, the Israelites groaned because of their difficult labor, and they cried out. And their cry for help because of the difficult labor ascended to God. Notice here that for the Israelites, it wasn't just that they're groaning because life isn't easy. They're not just groaning because of this consistent oppression and slavery. They're not just groaning because of the atrocity of seeing these children that are killed. They're not just groaning, but there's an action step that they take. They turn their attention to God and they begin to cry out. You know what's worse than being in your lowest moment? You know what's worse than that? It's being in your lowest moment without hope. And you know what's worse than being in your lowest moment without hope? I think there's something worse than that. It's being in your lowest moment without hope and assuming that you're the one that can fix everything. And you know what I think is worse than even being in your lowest moment without hope and thinking that you're the one that's going to fix everything and make everything right? It's believing that you're not in your lowest moment. It's continuing to tell yourself that things are okay and it's going to be all right and this is just a season, and never being honest enough with yourself to recognize what maybe the decisions of other people have brought you to the place that it's brought you to, or what your own decisions have brought you to. I would say that the only thing that is worse than being in my lowest moment is being there and thinking that I'm not. But the Israelites, they knew. They knew what they were facing on an everyday basis, and even in those difficult moments, they knew, and they began to cry out to God. They began to take that step towards Him. And I want you to recognize today that for them to cry out to God, this tells us something about what it means for us in that moment where life is so difficult and life is so hard. Where we recognize that crying is an act of surrender. Crying is an act of surrender. It reveals that the pain or the despair of the moment has come to a place that I need help in my current situation. When I was 19 years old, I was serving as an intern at my home church. I'd gone off to college for a year and had come back. Started him at 19, and they put me in charge. Actually, we didn't have a youth pastor, so they put me in charge of the youth ministry, which was kind of weird because, like, the students I was leading were 18, and we were hanging out as friends the year before, and now I'm telling them what to do, right? But that year, we decided that it'd be a good idea for a 19-year-old youth intern who was leading this thing to lead the students to Colorado for a week-long campout. And so we had, I think at that time, we had like 4 15-passenger vans, and we loaded up, and we had some, you know, we had some adults on the trip, but I was leading this trip, and we began to make our way to Colorado. We were going to camp out for the week, and we're making our way up, and we get to Amarillo, and we stop for bathroom break and to let the kids get some snacks. And so we go into the gas station, and I'm standing in the gas station again. It's full of students that are picking out candy and spending all their parents' money, right? It's that moment's happening. And I'm standing there on the candy aisle, and next to me is a young girl, a middle school girl by the name of Malia Simpson. Malia was a precious, precious girl. And she's sitting there looking at the candy aisle. She's trying to decide if it's going to be M&Ms or Skittles or licorice or, you know, sour straw. What is it going to be? She's making that decision like she'd done, you know, 100 times before and has done to this time. But in that moment, something happened. I'm standing there next to her on this aisle, and all of a sudden, Malia passes out. Well, she doesn't pass out. She faints, and then when she hits the ground, her body begins to convulse. Now, can I tell you what I didn't do in that moment? I didn't say, everyone step back. I'm 19 years old. I'm the leader, and start throwing out a bunch of medical terms. I didn't say, everyone get back, get me the crash cart, right? I just begin to say, hey, somebody, we need someone over here. I just begin to cry out. I don't even really remember what I was saying other than, here is a moment that is bigger than me, and I feel helpless in this moment, and I begin to cry out. And by God's provision, 2 days before we left for that trip, Malia's dad's decided that he would jump in and serve as a driver for us in one of those vans, and he knew exactly what was happening, that she was diabetic. He took some cake icing and rubbed it on her gums, and she began to take some healthy steps forward. They took her to the hospital, and she ended up joining us for the rest of the trip. But I want you to know that in that moment, right, there was no trying to figure it out. There was no me trying to assess the situation and know what's the best. I was just in a moment of panic and began to cry out. And we see that in the Bible as well. Some of you remember the story of Jairus. His daughter was sick to the point of death. And it says that as Jesus was making his way through the crowd, Jairus came and he begged Jesus. He cried out to Jesus. We also see the story of a Syrophoenician woman who, it says that her daughter was possessed by a demon, and she came to Jesus and she cried out to Jesus. Why? Because it was a place of surrender. It was a place of desperation, of recognizing that on the other end, my daughter is not herself. For the Israelites here, in the midst of this moment, this oppression day by day, it led them to cry out. Now, I want you, if there's nothing else you hear today, I want you to listen to this next sentence I'm going to read, because I'm praying that God will use it as an evaluator for where you're at in this journey. Listen to this. I believe it'll be on the screens. A failure to cry out to God about the sin in my life reveals a gross misunderstanding of the deadly nature of my sin, a distorted belief that God's apathetic towards my sin, or a prideful ego that overlooks my sin. You see, for the Israelites, life was hard and difficult. They had no one to turn but to the Lord, and so they cry out to him. In the same way, whether it was me with a middle school girl who was convulsing on the ground, or Jairus who thought his daughter was going to die, or Syrophoenician woman who understood that her daughter was demon-possessed, in that moment, there was a crying out from desperation. And so I would ask you today, when is the last time that you cried out to God to acknowledge your sin? Because if I have a failure to cry out to God over my sin, it means that either I don't think my sin's that big a deal, or I've come to this place of thinking that God's just apathetic towards it, that, you know, he's got a lot of other things to take care of, he's got a lot of other people to take care of, and so it's not that big a deal. Didn't affect me yesterday, not going to affect me today. And so we just keep walking through life thinking it's not that big a deal. And we don't cry out and see the seriousness of the sin in our life. The Israelites, they cried out to him. Crying out, it also exposes my belief in who will lead me out of my lowest moments. Right? Whenever one of our boys, one of your kids, one of your grandkids, when something happens, a toy is taken from them, brother or sister slaps them, they're taking a ride around the ceiling fan and they fall off. I don't know if that's just my kids, but, right, whatever it is that happens and all of a sudden the tears come. You know what my kids don't do? They don't go to their little box of Legos and just hold their box of Legos until their heart is consoled. They don't go to a stuffed animal. There's one of two people that in that moment they're looking for. It's either mommy or it's either daddy. And if mama and daddy aren't around, they're going to look for a grandparent if a grandparent's around. Why? Because in that moment of pain, in that moment of frustration, in that moment of anger, when they have this release of the situation at hand, they are going to the one that they trust most. Listen, for the Israelites here, they're in oppression and they're crying out to God. It reveals who they believe is the one that can lead them out of this lowest moment. For some of us, we're walking through low moments in our life and we've had a conversation with everyone around us except for the God that we say we believe is the one that can pull us through and give us hope. The Bible shows us over and over again of people crying out to God. Last thing I want us to see today is this. Is to recognize that God hears you and he knows. Now listen, I recognize the heaviness of this moment, right? The heaviness of us having to take an honest look at our hearts and see, listen, do we recognize the sin that's in our life? And are we going to God with that sin and confessing that sin and asking God to forgive us of that sin? Listen, I recognize the heaviness of that, but don't miss the hope that is found right here. Look with me in verse 24. It says that they had cried out to God. Verse 24. And God heard their groaning. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham, and with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God saw the Israelites, and God knew. Again, I want us to know today, please know my heart in this. I want us to know today that we cannot experience the freedom found in God until we acknowledge the bondage that our sin has put us in. But from that place, I want us to see here that for these people, in the midst of their oppression, they cried out to God. And what we see on the other end of that was a God who heard them. A God heard their cries. He saw them and he knew. Would you know this, that when you cry out to God, whether that's a situation just because you live in a fallen, broken world and things seem to be falling all around you, or whether you're in a situation that it's because of the choices of other people that have affected your life and it's brought you to a low moment, Or maybe for you, you've come to that low moment in your life because of the grip that sin has on you and that addiction or whatever it is, it's led you to a place that you never thought you would be. Would you know that in the midst of that low moment, God hears you? God hears you. So you know that from that place, when we cry out to him, we're not calling out to a God with deaf ears. We're not calling out to a God who hears us but chooses to ignore us. I want you to know that when you are at your lowest moments, you have the audience of the God that has created all things. And what does he do in this moment when he hears them? Well, look at what it says here. It says that he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I hope that you've seen over these last couple of weeks, that's a huge thing. That's a huge thing that that God here would remember. No, I have made this covenant commitment to him. When it says remember here, this is not like some of us that we're good at losing our keys. Anyone in here, you're good at losing your keys, right? Like it's your spiritual gift, right? You're really good at it. This is not that God's sitting up there on his throne and all this is played out and he goes, oh man, I forgot. I had told these people that I was going to be their God and they were going to be my people. And he remembered. No, this is him recommitting to saying, you know what? I am not going to let these people walk through this on their own. I understand the commitment that I've made to them and I am going to be faithful to them. And so God hears. Listen, would you know today that if you walked into this room and it's the lowest moment of your life, God hears you. Would you know today that if you've walked in here and it's the lowest moment of your life, God knows. And that's a message of hope for some of us that because we're dealing with the shrapnel of other people's decisions and we feel like we're all alone, that's a message of hope to say, you know what, God knows what I'm walking through. He's fully aware. But for some of us, if we walk in here today and we walk in our lowest moment because we're continuing to allow sin to have free reign in our life, it's a message of hope, but it's also a message of reality. Listen, God is fully aware. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. He's fully aware that you've continued to chase after the world's desires. But here's what I want you to hear today. Hear me, people of God. Here's what I want you to hear today. Is that regardless of what you have done, regardless of what you have looked at, regardless of what relationships that you have had, there is nothing that you could do that would make God love you any less. Can we just amen that? There's nothing that you could do that would make God love you any less. In our lowest moments, we know that God hears us and he knows. He knows that sin in our life. He's fully aware of it. But listen, there's hope today because what we see here, not only is God going to hear, and not only as we see here, he's going to know, but eventually he's going to work. In fact, he has been working, and the way that he's working is he is raising up a deliverer. Do you know his name? Moses. He's raising up a deliverer, Moses, that will deliver his people from their lowest moment, will deliver them from the bondage of their slavery. And hear me, this is the hope that we have today. That just as God was raising up a deliverer, Moses, to deliver his people from the bondage of slavery, it was a wink to us from Exodus that God was raising up a better deliverer named Jesus that would come not to free you from the power of some foreign enemy, but would deliver you from the power of sin and the grip that it has on your heart. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 3, it tells us that Moses, he was a servant in God's household as a picture of one who was to come. But Jesus, the better Moses, he is the son over the household. And so I would just ask you today. I would ask you today, where does God find you right now? Where does God find you? Does he find you in your lowest moment? Does he find you in a place of hopelessness? Does he find you in a place where the grip of sin has been so heavy on your heart for so long that you walk into this room and you walk through your life every day fearful that people are going to really find out about who you really are? Are you struggling over or under the oppression of sin? Are you assuming that your sin isn't that big of a deal, or that God's just apathetic? He hadn't really made a big deal out of it yet, so he's probably not going to make a big deal out of it tomorrow. Are you just continuing to walk in that? Are you in bondage to your sin? Listen, there's a deliverer who has come to set you free. In 1 Peter, it tells us this, that Jesus, that he himself, no one else, because no one else would do, that he himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. And by his stripes, you have been healed. By his sacrifice on the cross, that he became sin for you, that you might become the righteousness of God. It means that even in our lowest moments, that God heard us and he knows, and he has sent one to deliver us. Jesus told a story about a young man. This young man had decided that he'd had enough with how things were going around the house, and his whole life was in front of him. So he went to his father and he said, "Dad, listen, I need my cut. I need you to give me my portion of the inheritance." And so the father did, and this young man, he began to pursue his own way, his own life. You may remember the story that it led this man to a place that he never thought he would be. Jesus said it eventually led him to a place where he had squandered all that he had, and he found himself hanging out with the pigs and eating their pig food. I think we can all agree, you're at your lowest moment if you're eating pig food, amen, right? You're there. Right, Jesus recognized that we all have low moments. For this man, he was at his lowest moment because of the decisions that he had made, and it led him to a place that he never thought he would be. And in that moment of his lowest moment, he began to think, "Well, listen, my father, he has some servants. Now, they're not sons, they're just servants, and I know for a fact that they are living better than I'm living in this moment. So I'm going to go back, and I'm hoping that just maybe my dad will let me just hang out as a servant." And my fear is because most of us know this story so well that we forget the significance of what Jesus says in this story. He says, so the young man began to make his way back to the house, and when the father saw him, it says that the father rejoiced. He said, "My son who was lost has come home." And he took his coat and he wrapped him in, and he said, "Let's kill the fatted calf. Let's throw a party because my son has come home." Listen, some of us today, because of the choices that we have made, it doesn't look like it on the outside, but on the inside, we know we're just hanging out with the pigs. Our sin has taken us farther than we wanted to go. And it's led us to a place that we are so ashamed. And we do our best to cover up the guilt, but we live in it every day because we see the choices, the decisions, the relationships. We see those things in our life. And I want you to hear today clearly that God sees and he knows and he loves you and he's made a way.
Hey, I'm Josh Elliff, the campus pastor for the Calhoun campus here at First West. Thanks for watching today's broadcast. If you have questions or you want to make a spiritual decision, reach out to us. Call me at our office, 318-322-5104, and ask for me. I would love to connect with you as you process what God is doing in your life. Learn more about First West by visiting our website, firstwest.cc. Again, thanks for watching today.